Hi, this is Ernie Hudson, and you're listening to the Quantum Leap Podcast.
Welcome to the Quantum Leap Podcast, everyone. I'm Christopher DeFilippis, and it's time for the latest in our ongoing series, spotlighting the interviews that we've done with the cast and crew of Quantum Leap during Season 1 of the Revival series, the majority of which appeared only on our YouTube channel. And we have arrived at Episode 4, A Decent Proposal, which features Ben's first leap as a woman. This time around, we have an eclectic mix, beginning with Matt's chat with Tyson Theroux, who played Stuart Watkins. He was that sleazy creep who was hitting on Ben as he leaped in and the Human League was, you know, thumping away in the background. Matt also spoke to Anastasia Antonia, who played Ben's leapee, and mirror image Eva Sandoval. After that, Albie goes behind the scenes with stuntman Steve Rolver to talk about the stunts he did for A Decent Proposal, as well as his time in front of the camera as a bad guy in Episode 1. He shows up in that pawn shop scene. Then we wrap things up with an encore presentation of our interview with main cast member and acting legend Ernie Hudson. Ernie tells us how he got the part as Herbert Magic Williams III, the qualities he tries to bring to the character, all the while taking into consideration Magic's unique connection to the Legacy series. It is beyond surreal that we got to talk to Ernie, and I hope you have as much fun listening back to our chat as I did. Also beyond surreal, the continued support of all of you, our amazing listeners, with special thanks to our producers, Harold Sullivan, Glenda Palma, Chris, aka Brackmang, Mike Covert, Jeff Kiska, Craig Riedler, Cosplay Dad, Charles Allen Gossard, and Morgan Felden. If you would like to become a producer, you can do so by supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/quantumleappodcast. All right, enough of that. I think it's time that we said yes to the nudge and get this show rolling.
Hi, welcome to the Quantum Leap Podcast. I am thrilled to be bringing to you the latest interview with a member of the cast of the new series of Quantum Leap, Tyson Theroux. Tyson, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Now, we've just seen Tyson in the latest episode aired tonight, A Decent Proposal, so we are going to be talking about that. But first, I'd really like to understand a bit about your background, how you got into acting, some of your past projects. I really want to ask you about Loners in particular, but what can you tell me about your history to date?
Well, I grew up in a small town in Colorado, and I sort of fell in love with film on the set of Thelma and Louise. My sister is my older sister, and she graduated from our local college and happened to get a job in the Thelma and Louise production office. So when I was 12 years old, I was on the set, and, you know, Ridley Scott directing, Gina Davis and Susan Sarandon, and they took over this tiny little town in eastern Utah, smoke blowing down the street, you know, wetting the street down, neon lights, and just automatically I knew that this is what I wanted to do with the rest of my life.
How could you not be caught up in that?
It was incredible. I mean, you know, they call it being bit by the bug. And it was just, I was this sort of, and then the movie came out. And of course, it's an incredible movie. And, you know, it has social presence and everything. And that's sort of been my true north ever since. And so that was filmmaking. And then with acting, I sort of had a hard time in school. You know, I don't know if I want to say I was being bullied, but, you know, I was a shy kid. And I could do an Elvis impersonation, and that got me attention. And I did it on stage in the eighth grade and caught, you know, the hey, look at me disease. So those two things went together, and I came out to L.A. to go to USC Film School. And after I graduated from film school, I minored in theater and started acting. And the rest is history, I guess.
So quite a kind of very focused, driven through
really
line for you, starting from that first moment.
Yeah, I really consider myself lucky to have that passion for something in life. You know, like, I feel like if every teenager could have a passion for something like that, that drives them forward and gives them purpose, being a teenager would be a heck of a lot easier.
Yes. Yeah, the reason I wanted to talk to you about Loners, besides the fact that it's a really fun film, and you're great in it as an actor, but I noticed the production credit you mentioned about the interest in filmmaking. What led you to be involved behind the scenes on that?
Yeah, it's funny, you know, so I went to film school, and that was my major. And once I graduated, I just focused on acting, sort of sadly. And then this opportunity sort of fell into my lap to get back into the filmmaking side of things. And I was in this play in Los Angeles called Lone and None. And I thought that it would make a good film.
Right.
And a friend of mine had a hookup at a local film school to film there and use their cameras and soundstage and everything. And so I talked to the writer, and we kept the main six cast members of the cast of the play, and then we added 20 more actors and opened it up. And just such a fun experience, you know, creating my first feature with friends that I love. And I'm proud of the movie. It was kind of like going back to film school. So now I have a couple of other projects that I have in the pike as well, and we'll see if I can push those rocks up the hill.
Great. I'll ask you about those at the end. I definitely want to hear about them. Sure. But yeah, for our listeners and our watchers that haven't seen Loners, I mean, yeah, you got Stephen Tobolowsky in it.
Yeah.
I assume he's one of the extras that you added in that wasn't there in the original. And
yeah, I was in an acting class of his, and I just love him. He's got an amazing podcast too. I don't know if you've ever heard the Tobolowsky Files. Just great podcast. Really, you know, philosophical, great, great guy. And he did this the favor of being in our film, and that was a real highlight.
Yeah, he always comes across as such a nice guy. And as I say, it's a fun film, and I definitely recommend it to the listeners. It's well worth watching. Some great commentary, as well as the obvious comedy. Sticking with the comedy theme, we got to talk about Quantum Leap. Obviously, that's what you're here for. How did you get involved with this role for Quantum Leap?
Well, the casting director, Jennifer Cooper and Lindsay have been sort of my casting angels. I met Lindsay, I don't know, maybe 10, 12 years ago, and they cast me in a couple of CSIs, CSI Cyber, where I played my usual bad guy and tried to shoot a kid and stuff. And then in CSI New York, where I was actually a good guy. And so, you know, they brought me in over the years, and I was lucky enough to be part of this. And it came at kind of the longest stretch of no gigs that I've ever had. And, you know, with the pandemic and everything, things have just really changed in the industry. And they came to my rescue again, and I'm incredibly grateful.
I'm going to ask you there then maybe about this, because I noticed in Loners, you play a bit of a dick. You mentioned in CSI, you play a bad guy. You're definitely not a nice guy in Quantum Leap either. Is this a typecast thing for you? Do you often get into the kind of slightly sleazier side? Because you're coming across as a really nice guy, which I'm very grateful for.
I'm a good actor.
I
think it's the beady little eyes that people look at my eyes and they don't trust me. So you know, for the same reason, I've never booked any commercial work because nobody wants me selling their products. So. But yeah, about three quarters of my roles are pretty nasty. I played Charles Manson once. That was on stage.
Okay.
You know, Ku Klux Klan members, and just as nasty as you can get, I've done it. So it's fun to be a character actor.
Yeah. So you were cast in Quantum Leap, and I guess were you there for the one day doing your footage for the end of episode 3 and the start of episode 4?
Yeah, well, we shot in episode 4, the last scene where he knocks me out, we shot that scene first on the backstage of the Universal lot, which was really fun. It's always great when you see the Universal trams going by, you know, and it makes you feel like the real deal. And then the next week, I think we shot at the bar, so we could shoot the end of three and the beginning of four, you know, the same day.
So yeah, tell me a little bit about the experience, maybe of that first day. Then starting off with that sequence outside, was that all you? No stunt double there taking the fall.
That was me, yeah. Because I'm a bad guy, I've been punched and shot and everything. So I guess
you're used to this then.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. the experience was incredible. I can honestly say this was, you know, maybe the nicest cast and crew that I've ever worked with. Ray was so nice. Caitlin, Travis, you know, guest starring. I know he wasn't really part of the official cast, but super nice guy. And you know, you're not always welcomed. It's kind of tough being a guest star sometimes because you're just this tiny little piece in this big wheel. And they were just so welcoming. It was so much fun. I was so happy to be working. I was so happy to be working on Quantum Leap. It was a show that, you know, when I was a kid, I watched every single week. And so it's super fun to be a part of that universe. And then the cherry on top was just how nice everybody was and just such a fun experience.
Oh, fantastic. And then you did the second day that you came back, you did the stuff inside the bar. And
yeah,
one thing I'm particularly interested in, I actually spoke to Anastasia last week, who played the Mirror Eva, so got some insights there. But I'm really interested in how, as a performer, you're able to switch between you've got to, presumably you're hitting on Raymond Lee, getting very much involved in that, and then suddenly he's being swapped out. I assume was that back to back that you did the mirror shot and the shots with Ray in sort of the same time frame.
What they eventually figured out was that she would just hide below the bar. So, you know, Ray is in camera and then he would drop down out of camera and then stood up. And so they whipped over to the mirror, whipped back, and she was there.
So was all in one. I assume the whip was to cover up a cut. That was
Yeah. They tried crossing it first, but then they realized they could just go up and down. And so
that's one way of doing it.
I know, it was fun. There was a slight little pause there, but it was just a practical effect. Yeah.
Yeah. So from your point of view, then you did have to just jump straight from this, being sleazy with one actor to just carrying straight on with another without. How challenging is that for you?
Well, you know, different actors work different ways, but I'm of the school where you kind of use a substitution. And so I already had a substitution in my mind, you know, for Ray. And so I'm just sort of using the same substitution when she gets up. And so it's, you know, kind of, you got half your brain here and half your brain over there. And so just focus on the over there.
Let's just maybe talk a little bit more broadly, because you said you used to be used to watch the show as a kid, and I'm sure, like many of us, you find one of the more fun elements of the show is that it can go anywhere in the past. What was it like walking into set that day and seeing 1981 around you?
I know, it's so much fun. First of all, the wardrobe they gave me was incredible. It was just so obnoxious. So that helps, you know. And then all the extras, the background, you know, actors with their great wardrobe. And the first night that we were doing the stuff in the back lot at Universal, it was really late. And so when they took lunch, you know, at midnight, we went back to our trailers and I just listened to a 1981 playlist and tried to dance as sleazily as I could in the mirror. So I kind of had that in my mind in between takes, you know, and I think I had a Blondie song in my mind to get me in the mood. So I was thinking of that Blondie song, I was four in 1981, but it's funny how all these songs like brought back all these memories, and it was fun to kind of go back to that time period.
Yeah, I was one at the time, and I had the same experience watching the show. I don't know if you've seen it yet, but they use a lot of era specific music in that episode.
And, I know. I was surprised. They must have a huge budget for music. And you know, it's funny. We were watching the end of Three with my wife and daughter in our hotel room in New York, and Don't You Want Me Baby came on, and that is like my wife's and I duet karaoke song.
Oh, so, fantastic.
Yeah, so it was really fun to hear that.
Yeah, that's and coming in at the end of episode three, such a serious episode, then just to hit you with that song in that.
Right.
Nice
change of pace. Nice change of pace.
Yeah. Massive tonal shift. So is there anything else that you can share with us about the experience of being on Quantum Leap, or the casting, or the people that you worked with?
Like I say, they're just all extremely nice. I listened to Ray's interview on your podcast, and you know, sometimes actors are good at being nice, but not necessarily themselves in interviews. And that really is him. And I was rewatching an old Quantum Leap episode. I watched the Jennifer Aniston episode, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And the original Sam has just so much heart, you know? I'm blanking on the actor's name.
Scott Bakula.
Yeah, thank you, Scott Bakula. He has so much heart, and I love how the show, it really took time. You know, the original took time. Like there's pauses and stuff. They let the actors think, and that's not really something that happens much in network TV now. But I like how they kept that heart, and I really feel like Ray has that heart. Like just being around him, you know, he really fits this character who can walk a mile in somebody else's shoes, because I feel like that's who he is in real life. And so it was just so much fun being around that. You kind of feel like you're up to something a little more special than your average, you know, TV show.
That's so good to hear. Like you say, Scott Bakula had a reputation for being such a nice, welcoming guy. And Ray seems to be getting that reputation as well. We're hearing from all the guest actors like yourself, Tim, how much fun it was to be on set. So
I hope it takes him far, and you know, he's the next Tom Hanks, you know, or Henry Winkler, just these people who have incredible you know, reputations that precede them, and then they live up to it.
Yeah, we all came off the interview feeling like, yeah, we hope he does well.
Yeah.
But enough of Ray's future. Maybe we can turn to your future. What kind of projects have you got in the pipeline that you can tell us about?
Well, as far as acting, you know, it's always a surprise because you get an audition and then you're working 2 days later a lot of the time. So I don't have anything with acting. With producing, I have several projects, but two that I'm working on more. One is based on the true story of a AP calculus teacher here in East LA named Anthony Yam. And I got a great director, writer named Sean Koo attached to it. He came up with this fun script where it's the teacher biopic, where for 6 years in a row, all of Anthony's students passed the AP exam, which was unheard of. And it was in a very, you know, low income school. 1 year, one of them got a perfect score, which only 12 kids in the world got, and they went to the Obama White House and everything. So it's just a super uplifting story. And then Anthony is a Korean immigrant. He came here when he was 12 or 13. So half of the movie is his first few years as an immigrant. And then the other half is his first year as a teacher, sort of both coming of age stories. And then he has a huge imagination, so it breaks into dance and song and, you know, all these imaginative scenarios. So we're really trying to mix up the teacher genre. So I love that project and all the heart in that. And then another one, I optioned this book based on my great grandfather, written by a Brit. He he was in the FBI in the 30s, and he broke up the first Nazi spy ring in America and in New York. And then he wrote a book about it, and he quit the FBI to write the book, which really made J. Edgar Hoover angry. So he went from being J. Edgar Hoover's protege to the top of his shit list. And the book was about the case in this world famous trial. And then Warner Brothers made the first anti-Nazi movie based on the book. And Edward G. Robinson played my great grandfather. It's called Confessions of a Nazi Spy. It was sort of a seminal movie in 1939, I think. And he was also a really complicated guy. He went on this anti-fascism, you know, speaking tour, tried to turn the tide against fascism in the U.S. and the world. And before it was, you know, well known what the Nazis were up to. And he was also a liar and a media hound. And, you know, we have no idea what the first 15 years of his life actually were because he told so many different stories. So I think it's a great character, very timely. You know, as so much of the world is figuring out which way to go. And I think it would make a great limited series. So I'm like reaching out now to all of my my writer, showrunner friends and seeing if I can dig up any interest there.
They both sound like really interesting projects. Best of luck to you, obviously. But yeah, genuinely, I'm interested to see where those go. So.
Well, hopefully you'll see them on the screen.
Well, please stay in touch with us as these progress. If you get titles for them, release dates, anything, we'll update the description in the YouTube video so any of the viewers can just look down below and they will see the latest links. Let us know. But for now, thank you again for your time. It's been really great talking to you and really fun hearing your experiences on the show.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on. And I hope that the show just keeps getting better and better, and even people as passionate about it as the three of you are can relive the glory of the original.
Hi there, welcome to the Quantum Leap podcast. I'm really happy to be bringing you the latest interview with a member of the cast of the new series of Quantum Leap, Anastasia Antonia. Anastasia, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Hello, hello.
Hello. Anastasia plays Eva Sandoval in the latest episode, A Decent Proposal. I'll be completely honest, we're recording this a couple of weeks before broadcast, so I have not seen it, so I am really looking forward to getting into a discussion about that and learning more. But first, I just want to go back a little bit and maybe talk about some of your history. Can I ask how you got started in acting? Was this something that you'd always wanted to do?
You know, it really was. I had my whole big dream about wanting to be an actress when I did my first theater play. And I believe I was about 12, 13 years old. It was the first time I experienced acting and just being completely immersed in artistic expression in this way. And I was hooked. I was completely hooked. I can still remember my little self sitting on the steps of that theater and just plotting, like, this is what I'm going to do. This is it. I found it. So that's my story.
Amazing. Oh, it was so nice to find that so early on. And was that, obviously, I know a lot of people start in theater. Was that the dream? Or was it just staying in the creative arts, whether it took you theater, film, TV? Was there some sort of,
I wanted to do movies. I wanted to do movies when I experienced plays. I do like plays, movies seemed like a more immersive experience. And that's kind of true in ways and kind of not, you know. But I wanted to experience telling stories on a broader scale and have those kinds of performances that are very grounded, and because the camera's in your face, right? When you're in theater, you're performing a bit bigger. You can still see it in those old movies, all the theater actors who transitioned into film, they're still kind of using techniques to play to the back of the audience. And I was really interested in having the most realistic experience possible as an actress, which means grounded. And camera's got to catch that.
Talk me through a little bit about where that took you. You decided this is my goal, this is my dream. Was the next step acting school?
We had acting school at the theater, right? It was a summer theater, so you were going through exercises. You had your teachers. We were kids doing it. And so that came with the Dune Summer Theater where I started. And I guess after that, I actually wasn't expressing to anybody that I wanted to do it professionally. I just had, I came from artists, you know, my family are a bunch of musicians and painters and costume designers and things like that. And that being said, it wasn't going into the arts wasn't going to be like a shock to anyone. I just really wanted to protect that dream because it was mine and I just wanted to do it. Like it was more of a, I'll just show them instead of tell them because I didn't want to get discouraged in any way either, you know, protect the energy around it.
It's interesting. I wasn't aware that you'd come from such an artistic background. I understand you've done some poetry as well, some modeling.
Oh yeah.
Kind of branched out a little bit as well. Is that a hobby and is that something that you're still doing?
I loved poetry especially when I was younger. It was one of my favorite expressions. Do I still write? I am writing. It's not so much poetry now. However, yeah, my first love was piano before I could write.
Music as well. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. My first love was piano. And then as soon as I could write, I just adored writing poetry. And it was something that I got published at a really young age. It was just something that I just loved the feeling of flow, like inspiration would hit and these words would come out. And it was such an interesting experience and it was really satisfying. So I wrote poetry for most of, you know, my life growing up and into being an adult. So basically that dance, I belly dance a lot. I love dancing. I've competed. I've danced bachata in music videos. Music and writing was definitely my first loves, but finding acting, I was like, oh, this is something I don't ever want to not do.
Right. So yeah, a very, very broad expression of styles. That's amazing.
Yeah.
And then I see you had some smaller roles. And if I'm right in thinking, 86 Melrose Avenue last year is that basically your breakout role? Had you done anything major before that? Maybe internally you feeling like I've made it. This is it.
Yeah. I mean, 86 Melrose Avenue was definitely a launch of sorts. Hmm. Yeah, and that was the first time I won an award for acting as well. So that's was a crazy, unexpected accomplishment that I was just so honored to have and grateful to have experienced. So I started modeling before acting professionally because I thought that was that would be a good bridge, you know, a good parlay into the acting world. I was scouted by a Ford Models agent. And I let them know immediately after I was signed, like, look, I love acting, you know, and my agents set me up with the proper agencies for entertainment. And my first ever role that I professionally did was in the movie The Promotion. And my scenes were with John C. Reilly. That was crazy. I'm such a fan of his. I know. Right. And Sean William Scott was in the film. And that was back in the days, like, you know, he was Stifler. He was such a phenomenon at the time, you know. And Jenna Fischer from The Office, which is one of my favorite shows. It's just one of everybody's favorite shows, right? It was a crazy experience. And just being acting across from people that I highly admired, That was wild. And it was definitely motivation to keep at it. Like I felt like I was onto something. I went to New York. I did I don't want to say sidetracked, but I did take some time to do more modeling. And I was doing that in New York City, working for certain designers and things like that. And then but the goal was always to get to LA to continue the acting. And I did. I came out here, and I would say that, you know, I did some indie films, some shorts and things like that. 86 Melrose Avenue came to me, and it was really special to begin with because it was the first ever Lebanese role that I've ever got to audition for, which sounds crazy, but there really isn't any Middle Eastern roles specifically, certainly that a lead would call for, right? Mm. No one's really making lead roles about Middle Eastern stories. So I was super excited, and it was an honor. It took a lot out of me emotionally, as you saw.
Yes.
It was a very, very intense. It was a crazy ride. I had a great team around me. I had the support of my co-star, Gregory. I had a great people around me for that role, and I really committed to it. For the making of that movie, I shut everything down. Like, I wasn't in contact with the outside world. And I just threw myself in it. And it was really just for the love of it, for the honor of my lineage, for the experience of it, and to do that story justice. And it was crazy to be recognized for that, because I was not going in there expecting that at all.
Yeah, it's an amazing film. And I think, yeah, all the actors, the whole cast really seem to be so focused on giving first-rate performances. And yeah, I watched it earlier on today, and I was very struck by, as you say, the having a Lebanese character as a lead. It wasn't what I went in there expecting. I knew it was going to be a film about gun violence and PTSD, but it also went to places I wasn't expecting, and it was good to have that representation.
Yeah, I mean, the director is from Lebanon, and she experienced a lot herself, so that was something she really tapped into for the script, and that is it's a unique story to tell, and it was just an honor all around to be a part of that.
Was that helpful, having that experience there, or did that up the stakes for you, knowing that you're, I guess, effectively telling the director's personal story?
I think there was a lot of creativity that went into it. I don't know that. I think it was founded on her story, but she created something different with it. It actually was more comforting for me to tell this story with someone who personally lived these very deep aspects of it. I felt safer doing it with her. Right. And I felt, you know, she's going to understand this in a way that somebody else who is not in touch with that world could understand it. So it was definitely a plus.
I could spend a lot of time talking with you about 86 Melrose Avenue. That's maybe a whole different interview. I was really impressed with the film, and I'm going to recommend all of our listeners check it out. It was not what I was expecting. I was expecting a good film, but it was it goes to a lot of places.
It sure does.
Let's maybe move on to something a little bit lighter and talk about Quantum Leap. So can you share with me how you became involved in that, how you were cast?
I was cast. I got the audition from my agent. And to be truthful with you, the original Quantum Leap was before my time, so I had to do research on it. I was talking about the audition to a few people, and like some of my family members, like, oh, that was my favorite show back in the day. You know, it was getting like these big responses, like, ooh, this is something, right? And so I got the audition, and it was a really quick turnaround. I booked it, I think, like a week later, something like that. And then the shooting was a quick turnaround as well. I did my research, which involved YouTubing a lot of the old episodes. And I was so excited once I watched the old episodes, how crazy cool that show was, or is, you know, these shows don't die. So that's what happened. I just went in there. I auditioned, booked the role. Next thing I know, I'm on set working with Rachel Talalay, who's the director. I wasn't familiar, with who was cast yet, right? There was like, when okay. I booked it, there was nothing out about it yet, but I was really happy to have met such a cool, funny cast to be involved in this project with.
And, I'm just going to mention as well, having spoken to a lot of people from the original series, it sounds like you've had the casting experience that dates back to the 80s and 90s. The amount of people that say, oh, I was cast on Quantum Leap and I did the audition and the day later I was in wardrobe. It's,
is that
seems
really,
to be a tradition
really?
They're keeping up. Yes.
That's interesting.
That quick turnaround has been a mainstay of Quantum Leap since the original.
Wow, that's good to know. I like that.
I don't know if that helps the experience or not, being thrown right
you
into
know,
it.
You know, you just really just leap into the show, I guess. Next thing you know, your life has changed.
So can you help me out a little bit? Because as I say, I haven't seen the episode yet. By the time our listeners hear this, they will have done. So they'll know exactly who you are, but I don't. I gather you play a bounty hunter. Is that right?
Is correct. I am a badass bounty hunter in the 80s. Badass. Yeah.
And are you, again, am I right in thinking you're the person that Ben leaps into? So you're effectively playing the mirror image of
That's
him?
Correct. That's correct. Okay. He gets to walk around in my clothes.
Excellent. So I take
fighting,
it that
crying in a thong.
Take it there were two different sets of different size clothes. He's not wearing something that he's stretched into.
There were three. I mean, we had a stunt double too. So
Yeah,
there was all three of us walking around that set.
A lot of the time, the actors playing the mirror images were extras. They were non-speaking roles, so they were hired from extras agencies. You've obviously got a serious acting career growing. What kind of preparation were you able to bring to the role in terms of preparing for the character?
For Eva, I really just meditated to get into her. She's not... I feel like I have a lot of seeds that... there was a lot of parallels in my personality that had they have flourished in one direction versus another. I'm not saying I would have been a bounty hunter, but now
you've done everything else. Why not?
She's got a love for action. She's a fiercely independent, tough girl. I've had how life goes. There's times where you express one side more than the other. And I can definitely relate to being tough and on my own and, you know, a need for action, a love of justice, kind of living life a little bit on the edge. And also she's like fiercely loyal to her family. Like family means a lot to her. She works for her father. And these are all things that I was like, oh, this is going to be easy for me to sink into. And then I get to just turn that up and turn it up a few notches to be some tough girl in the 80s fighting crime. That's an easy sell to me. I loved it. Nice. Even on a personal note, you know, she put her career before her love life. And I can totally relate to that. I had blinders on for me. I was not going to get distracted when it came to starting my career. And there's just a lot of elements of Eva they pronounce it both ways in the series, that resonated and lived inside of me. So that was easy. I meditated. What was interesting was getting on set and now taking in Ben's interpretation of what it meant to be in her. So I prepared for what I could, but then it was a collaborative experience on set when Raymond Lee would do, scenes and I would have to then add that into it. Right now I'm a man in my body, which was fun as well. And he was really he's a gem of a person to work with. He was so cool, so kind, made sure I was seeing everything from every angle. The rehearsals were on par. And yeah, very unfortunate to be working with him because you're not always going to get that.
Yeah. And I guess, I was going to ask about, working with Raymond and how that ended up filtering into your performance. So it's good to know that, I guess, he's got that kind of, he's created that welcoming environment. You've spoken a couple of times about the fact that it's set in the 80s, which we know, of course. How was that, walking onto the set? And you've done all this preparation internally for the character, but then seeing, I guess, the costumes, the music, the lights, the set pieces.
I loved
it. What was that like stepping into the 80s? I grew up in the 80s. This was before your time, I guess. So
I loved it. I love 80s music. I love, grew up in the 90s, but the 80s, it was just, a stone throw away from what it was like for me to grow up. That was the foundation to set the tone for the next decade. And I don't know. I just loved it. I loved watching 80s movies growing up, and I loved, there was a rawness there, but also strangely upbeat in the films, like the music was happy, depending on what genre you were listening to, but I do like 80s pop music. I just loved it. There's a rawness there that definitely 90s was also very raw. I miss that.
Yes. I just want to go back a step, actually, and talk briefly about the work you did with Raymond. How did the mirror effects work? Because there's been a few tricks we've seen already in terms of just doing a straight on reflection through, like with a reversed set where you're just facing each other. Some CG work, just standing next to each other and looking in a mirror. How did it come together for you on the day there?
There was the mirror work, but then there was also fun POV, like from peepholes, rear view mirrors, things of that, but the peephole was cool because it was actually Sophia Pernis looking out of her peephole to see who it is. Mm-hmm. And I'm coming to her door as a little more masculine as Raymond and, trying to get her to let me or open the door and things like that. I thought it was pretty creative, and I thought POV is a fun thing. Add, was POV in the first series?
No, they never did that. It was when we saw, we'd sometimes see a POV from a distance, and it would always be looking at Scott Bakula, usually talking to himself as he's talking to the hologram.
Right. It was like a random POV, like a passerby.
It would be somebody watching this crazy guy talking to thin air. So they would show that. Scott Bakula was talking to thin air, but they wouldn't show that it's actually somebody else. One of the inventive things they've done in this series to allow the leapy actors to get involved a little bit more. So
it's cool. Yeah, it was pretty fun.
So are there any stories from the set that you can share, any anecdotes, anything? Again, because I haven't seen this, I need a little bit of help and guidance in terms of anything that you think the listeners might be interested in hearing about.
I know Justin Hartley is a big topic.
Yes.
We can talk about him. It was actually funny. I am not into celebrity gossip or tabloid stories or anything like that. I know This Is Us is a major show. I have not watched it. So when I first went on set and met him, I was like, oh, cool. My partner's really, he's a good looking guy. This will be great. This is going to be, great for this, for the character. And, so then we were talking on set, and he was really funny. And we were getting to know each other, and he mentioned that he really loves his wife. And he was so kind, and I could tell that he really cared about his relationship. And I was like, oh, that's so nice, because it aided to the dynamic in our role development. So then the next day I get to set and I'm going to the makeup chair, and there I see Sophia Pernis, and I know her from years ago, and I had no idea that's who he was married to. All I knew was that the people on set were kept talking about making sure that me and her name is Tammy in the episodes, that me and Tammy looked far enough apart. I'm like, Tammy, how does an Eva Sandoval look like a Tammy? Put it together. When I started, I was like, oh, that makes sense. Cause she's, you know, a North African Spanish mix. I'm a Middle Eastern Latin European mix. And so we totally caught up. And then they caught me up on, like, you know, she's married to Justin and all of those things. And we just had a ball, like, laughing and hanging out. But I could not get over the fact that running into her again and then catching up on everything that's happened and getting the crazy stories. And they're just a blast to work on. They're very funny. They're very much in love. And that was a beautiful and funny, weird coincidence on set. And then any other anecdotes? I would say that the crew was really great to work with. We had a hairstylist who always was playing music behind the scenes on the off, and people would get up there and sing. Raymond was like doing karaoke at some point to a song. I would be like,
yeah, we've heard he likes to sing a little, yeah.
He sure does. Like, he like got just all of a sudden just got up and started singing this song to it was just hilarious. I was like 1 a.m. and like some people are bouncing around, and then I pan to the left and some other people are dead, and it was just on the fake set of a city. It wasn't New York, but you know, an LA fake set on the Universal lot. It was just it was just really fun. It was really odd and amazing all at the same time.
Sounds like an amazing experience. Is there any, are there any upcoming projects you have? Anything that you're working on right now that you'd like to tell our listeners about?
Yes. Lotus Land it's kind of a similar role to Eva Sandoval. I play a femme fatale. I drug the main characters and steal a very valuable family heirloom. And let me ask you this. Do you know who Bun B is?
No.
Are you a hip hop fan?
No.
He's like 90s hip hop.
Okay. All right.
Maybe early 2000s. But he plays this really funny role. He's like the main two characters who are going through the stories. He's their uncle and giving them advice about how to get them out of this hell. You know, I'm running a operation of seduction and thievery, and these guys I left them in the desert. They're like trying to piece together their lives after their interaction with me, and trying to, you know, get what they need back from me. And I don't want to give too much away, but it tapped into like a really fun couple of seedy worlds. And that is in national film festivals right now, and it's proof for a series. So that might very likely become a TV series in itself, which would be a ton of fun for me. And other than that, there's a couple feature projects that I'm working on right now that I would love to come. Well, I guess I can't come back and talk about because this is a Quantum Leap podcast.
But we'll find an excuse. We've brought people back before. It's fine.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, come back and talk about that.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, it's best of luck with Lotus Land. It sounds like...
Oh, thank you so much.
It sounds very cool anyway, but also it sounds like, since it's tapping into a little bit of what you're doing in Quantum Leap, sounds like some of our listeners would find some natural enjoyment out of that as well. So
definitely. Yeah. That'd be great.
We'll check that out.
Fingers crossed.
Thank you so much for your time.
Well, it was so nice to meet you. Yeah, definitely. Thank you for having me.
Leapers, and welcome to the Quantum Leap podcast. I am here with Steve Brawlver, and he is the stuntman extraordinaire that works on the new Quantum Leap series. Hey, Steve, how you doing?
Hey, I'm good. I just doubled Jake on that episode. I'm not on every episode, but I've worked on two of the new ones so far.
Okay, yeah, this one and the one that aired first, right? You were actually in a scene on camera.
That's right. I was a bad guy in the first episode. Yeah.
So how is that different than just doubling for someone?
Well, I'm playing a part versus I am doubling somebody else's part. So, you know, like I'm either a character or there already is a character, and then I just do the character stunts. So.
Nice. I noticed in episode 4. There was jumping off of buildings and into dumpsters. That looked dangerous. And what did you do in episode 4?
Episode 4, and I'm not just saying this because we're having this conversation, that was a dream job for me. That episode was a stuntman's clinic. And in 3 days straight, I jumped off a roof, did driving on the back lot, and went to a breakaway table. It was literally like all the things you want to do as a stuntman. And it was like bang, 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 one right after the other. It was truly a clinic. And not only was it that I got to do some driving that was fun, but it was also, I did some on the back lot as well at Universal Studios, which is, you know, I took the tram tour as a kid and where the tram tour said, this is what I want to do. And here I am right back there where I was as a kid, full circle, doing driving stunts on the back lot. Absolutely amazing. I recognize the significance of it.
That's so awesome. Is that the same back lot like they filmed some parts of Back to the Future on and stuff?
Back to the Future was my favorite movie as a kid. I probably, without a doubt, no hesitation, I could recite the movie to you from the opening. Same. Yeah. And yeah, so it was really cool the fact that like when I first rode that tram, that you could clearly see the clock tower was still there. It's still there, but it's blocked. There's another facade in front of it. But, you know, so every time I'm on the back lot, I go right over to that clock tower. I go right to the courthouse, go inside of it, and then there's the old clock tower behind it. And I take a few moments to spend a little time in there and just recognize, hey, this is where my favorite movie was filmed, and I am at, like, the central part of that movie right now. And then for myself, just to be working right next to it, doing driving stunts, literally, like just right next to it, like in between takes, I'd go over there and I'd sit down in Courthouse Square. That was pretty cool for me. So that
is so amazing. Yeah. So what makes someone want to jump off buildings for a living?
Well, that's a good question. I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. I don't want to jump off buildings.
Okay. Neither do I. No. Neither do I.
No, that's just part of the job. Mm-hmm. I love doing stunts. You know, some people say, do you want to act? No, I just want to do stunts. Stunts is very fulfilling to me. It's rewarding to me. I love my job as a stuntman, and I get to do wonderful things, things that most people never get to do in their life. So if that includes jumping off of a building to make a living, I'm good with that.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty awesome. This episode, A Decent Proposal, I noticed there was three people, or it looked like three people. It might have been you three times. I have no idea. That jumped off the building. And into a dumpster, and that shot was kind of broken up. I'm assuming because you can't really jump off a roof into a dumpster safely. So maybe could you explain how the mechanics of that whole thing worked?
I was one of three because there were three different characters jumping. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Originally, the plan was to jump off of the roof into a dumpster. That was what was going to happen. They were going to do it in pieces. And then that kind of changed when we saw how big the dumpster was. And
not big at all, right?
The dumpster was very, very small. And there was no way it could be done without going to the hospital. So,
It looked super dangerous even in the cut.
Yeah.
At the end.
So that was done actually in separate pieces, pieced together to make it look like it was one jump. Jumped off the roof into a porta pit on top of boxes. Then after we did the jump off the roof, then we were up on a scaffolding and we jumped off the scaffolding into the dumpster. So the scaffolding was not nearly as high. And then they just put it together and make it look like movie magic.
Wow, yeah, it looked amazing. It looked scary, and it looked dangerous. Like, in real life, if you did that, you'd be lucky to survive at all, you know?
Well, interesting that you say that. I'm still paying the price for it a little bit. We did the rehearsal day, and we were trying to figure out how to do that first jump. And the idea was jump and stick the landing, because you're going to get tight and go into dumpster. But everybody who knows how to jump off a building well knows that you can't stick the landing, especially someone my size is over 200 pounds. If you stick it, all of that weight coming right down, it's going to be really hard on your joints, right? So I said to myself, all right, here we go. Let's stick it. And the way I should properly do it was tap and fall forward. Since we're not going into a dumpster, we're going into a pad and boxes, tap and fall forward. But on the rehearsal, I said, all right, come on, Steve, make it look great. Just go for it and stick it. And I, boom, stuck it, right? 2 feet flat, right on the pad. Whew. Ankle. Bad. Bad. That hurts so bad. Oh, my God. I couldn't walk for 2 days. We did the rehearsal on a Friday, and I thank God that we had that rehearsal on Friday, because had I done that on Monday, I would not have been able to do the stunts on Tuesday and Wednesday. I needed the weekend to recover, had to definitely put ankle braces on both for the next one. And when we did it again, if you look, when I jump off, I'm kind of leaning forward a little bit and giving a little bit of a swim. That's because that way I can tap and fall forward versus just, boom, stick it and hurt myself. And so that's how it happened, and I'll be all right, you know. It's part of the job. So
that's showbiz, right? That's what they say.
Yeah, well, they pay me to fall down, and then they let the actor get up. So
were you like me? I just had this question come up in my head today when I was thinking about it. I'm gonna be talking to you. When you were a kid, did you watch The Fall Guy like I did, and think that was like fun?
You mean
something to do?
You mean The Unknown Stuntman?
Who was it? Lee Majors, I think, played him.
Yes, it was Lee Majors. Was my dad was the second unit director on the first season of The Fall Guy.
No way.
Yeah,
wow, so this runs in your family.
Yeah, he was the second unit director and stunt coordinator for season 1, and then after Fall Guy he went over to another Universal show which has a talking car.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, Fall Guys, I get it. You get it. Yeah. Mickey Gilbert was awesome. The stunt coordinator and Lee Majors stunt double for the rest of the series, but yeah, I did season 1. So
nice. Yeah. That's, I had no idea. Wow. So could you explain to us and me and how all the stunt things work? Cause you're a stunt man and there's a stunt coordinator, and then there's a stunt team, I'm guessing, because you work with other stunt people. Does that get assembled separately every episode?
Yeah.
Like a group of people that do it for the show?
Well, it varies. There's a stunt coordinator, on this show. The stunt coordinator is Jeff Barnett, who's a great friend. On the original was Diamond, and I know that you've interviewed Diamond. So the stunt coordinator is a regular on the series. And then then there's the regular doubles. So Tom Vu is the regular double on this one for Raymond. And there's the regular doubles. I'm not a regular on the show. I'm a guest. So I was doubling there's one guy who was 6'3" on this episode.
Yeah, he's tall.
Yeah. And Jeff said, all right, Brawler, I got a spot for you. So, like,
awesome.
Right on, bud. Let's do it.
Cool, cool. So, probably more episodes to come in the future, right?
Sure hope so.
Here and there.
Yeah,
that'd be great.
You know, I've done 2 so far. I think they're shooting number 9 next week. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, they just finished the Halloween episode, I think, which was, 8 probably?
You would probably know more than me.
6 was the original first one.
Yeah, 6 was the original first. I found that to be so fascinating. So, I'm looking forward to seeing that.
Looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Going through a table, like I've done that because I dabble in local professional wrestling and stuff. When professionals like yourself do it, what does that entail? Is there multiple tables and you go through a few times, or how do you set it up, or...
There were 3 tables that day.
Okay.
Yeah. We used one of them.
Oh, good. Yeah. First time you got it?
Yeah, we used one. Did one take and we were done. The other two, The other two were, well, they're out there somewhere. So I don't know what happened in those, so, but they're there.
Maybe in another episode.
Yeah.
Maybe they have your name on it, and one day you get to go through those too.
I'll tell you, I don't always, my opinions really don't matter. But when I see the stunts that I do, you know, everyone's very critical of their own work, and I don't always really care for how they edit the stunts. A lot of times it'll be edited where you don't even see the ground and I smash the ground or whatever. But I was really impressed with the editing on this episode. They really edited the stunts and made it look better than I thought that it was going to. So kudos, Quantum Leap editors.
Yeah, they did good, and you did good, because I did not see you at all, even though I know I saw you.
Yeah.
It looked to me like it was the person you were doubling.
I make a living doing this. It's funny because I saw my face, but I knew if
it, oh, did you?
Yeah, okay. If you in like, you know, I'm not trying to be seen, obviously.
Right.
If you see my face, yeah, then it didn't do perfect, but sometimes you can't help it. Mm-hmm. But there was where I'm jumping off of in the club in the whiskey, mm-hmm, which wasn't the mm-hmm real whiskey, by the way. It was another club on Sunset where I jumped down off of that and go through the table. There's a shot where they're looking up, and really quickly they cut from him to me, and they're looking right up, and you see my face as my legs swing over and then go down through the table.
Ah,
so
okay.
I look close enough to him. So
yeah. Good double. I'll check that out next time I watch it. I have to watch it one more time.
I mean, you would have to freeze frame it and go, yep,
probably.
But I mean, that's, yeah, if you're doing that, then you're missing the point of the show anyway. So
yeah.
And then ironically, I want to tell you one other thing about that.
Yeah.
We get out of the dumpster. It's me who jumps out of the dumpster, and I'm literally like this with my back to them as I'm getting out, trying to hide my face, and like we're running off, and I'm like hunched over, going like that. So you can see me, mm-hmm, hunched over hiding as I jump out of the dumpster.
Okay. Yeah. I'm going to watch that.
Yeah.
So that's all like, Hollywood garbage, right? Like, is that like foam blocks inside garbage bags or something, inside the dumpster?
Yeah, it was brick. It was stone. It was cement. It was rock. It was icicles. It was,
all the dangerous stuff. Barbed wire.
Nails. Yes. Barbed wire.
Yeah.
The barbed wire got me here, and here. Yeah. So yeah, you know, I would not recommend doing that because it's going to hurt when you jump into that stuff.
Mm-hmm. The driving, so the stunt coordinator knows, like your qualifications and, you know, he goes, oh, you'd be great for this scene to drive in this scene or something. How does the driving go? How do you learn to drive, stunt drive and all that stuff?
Yeah, you just learn. You just do it. I have five cars here at the house.
Nice.
Four of them are classics. So two of them are stick. You know, one's a 67. I have a 67 Camaro big block. It's a muscle car. It's got a four speed.
What color?
Red. I have a YouTube channel for it, actually. If you do care to look at it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I will.
1967 Camaro versus the world.
Okay. Yeah. I will look at that.
Yeah.
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 I used to drive a 78 Camaro.
Nice.
So
yeah.
Yeah. They were good. Yeah. It was Hunter Green. It was nice.
Cool. Right on. Yeah. So anyway, answer your question. You learn how to do that stuff. You get practice days. You go find. You get a track. You get an open parking lot where you know you're safe. Sometimes you rent cars. Mm-hmm. Some people, you know, have stunt mm-hmm cars. Some people do have cars that you can rent for doing that sort of thing. And you mm-hmm you just do as much as you can so you get a feel for it. So I did some driving earlier this week on another show. So I'm doing some driving next week. So I'm thankful to be doing that. Really fun.
Always working.
Let's say always working. I mean,
keeping busy.
I've been very blessed and very lucky lately. I know what it's like to not work, and I've gone through many, many stretches of downtime where the phone's not ringing. So I'm thankful right now that I've got some stuff that I've just done, and I've got some more coming up. It's getting to do what I want to do.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So you mentioned your dad was a stunt coordinator. So you grew up in this business. It was like it's in your blood. Did you always assume you were going to do it? Did you always want to do it? Or did it just work out that way?
I want to make it clear. Because the way you said that, it may have come across like he was a stunt coordinator on this show on Quantum, which he wasn't.
No. And
I want to make it clear.
The Fall Guy season one and then Knight Rider.
That's right, Knight Rider, yeah. Yeah, so just want to make it clear. He still is, in my opinion, a stunt coordinator for many shows. Did I grow up in Hollywood on set? No. I went to set a couple of times, but not very much. Dad retired when I was in high school. I wish he hadn't have, because he could have helped me further along in my career had I known I was going to do this. But he tried to keep me out of doing stunts. He said, Steve, you shouldn't do this. I don't want you doing this. He tried to steer me towards doing other things. But I knew I wanted to be in the movie business. I moved back to LA after I finished playing ball. I started as a PA, and then I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do, and how I was going to do it. Then I learned the extras made more money than the PAs. And I was like, well, let's get my SAG card and do that. And I can still be on set and learn. And as I was doing that, I was watching who has fun and who's miserable.
That's smart. That's a good way to know what to do.
Yes. There's a lot of different departments, but I realized if you want to have fun and be in the business, you're either a producer, a director, or a stuntman, or an actor sometimes, depends. But to be an actor is a whole different thing. It's like, I mean, I'm sure actors have a great time doing what they get to do, but that's a different path, you know, and working my way up from industry and what I want to do, and realize I do want to do stunts and I love doing stunts. So I said, stuntmen are having fun. That's where it's at. And that was the beginning. I've never looked back.
So, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Can we talk a little bit about episode one of Quantum Leap? What did you do on there?
Very, very little. It was actually, but what was cool though, was I was there for the very first day of filming. So I know they did that pilot episode, in Canada, but this was the first day in California with this crew. And I was like, well, I want to make sure I see them call action and cut for the first shot. And so I did. And it was a shot that they were doing. I think like, Ben is running across the street to one of the cars. Then he gets in the car, and then they do a dialogue in the car with, I forget the guy's name. He had a beard. He was a guest star. Yeah. Really nice guy, by the way, because I ended up doing my stunt, with him later on. And we were in the jewelry shop, and I was like a goon. And they just had me there because I'm slamming his head into the glass, and they wanted someone to take care of him and not, you know, someone who could slam an actor's head into the glass without, you know, something bad happening. So
yeah, it's important.
Yeah. Right? So that's what I was doing that. I mean, look tough in the background, and then
you did look tough. You're a tall guy. You're a big guy. So intimidating. So that, you know, they typecast you, I guess.
It's funny. Like a guy smile. I don't look mean. Yes. Right, but they say action. I do this.
I wouldn't have messed with you.
Yeah, it's just it's Hollywood tough, you know. In the real world, I'm not that tough.
No, that's the way it should be, right?
Hollywood tough.
Now there's fans of the new Quantum Leap that are fans of the original Quantum Leap that might be interested to know that you worked with someone else from the original Quantum Leap at one point in your career.
Oh, are we speaking of a gentleman named Scott?
Yes, one Mr. Scott Bakula.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah. What show was it on? Was it on NCIS New Orleans or something?
Actually, it was NCIS.
NCIS?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. This was early in my career, and I didn't even know that Diamond was Scott's double for the entirety of Quantum Leap. And when I was there working for Diamond on NCIS, I did not put together that connection because I didn't know at the time. You know, I love the history of stunts, and I have done a lot of homework since then, but that was, it was probably 10 years ago. You know, it was the episode where they introduced Scott Bakula's character for NCIS New Orleans. It was like the it was the introduction slash kind of crossover, but it wasn't really they hadn't created that show yet. So
like a crossover backdoor pilot kind of deal.
More or less. I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there. I was doubling an actor on that episode, and that character is like kind of like ignoring Scott's character. I forget what was his character on NCIS New Orleans?
Dwayne Pride.
I think. That's correct. Yeah. He was kind of giving Pride the shoulder. And then Mark Harmon says to him, uh-oh. And then all of a sudden, Bakula grabs the actor, kind of takes him through the lens, cut to Bakula grabs me and throws me over the Mercedes. So I hit the ground. I give him one of these. Cut to actor rolls over, goes, ah. So
that's funny. That's
I remember we did that four times on that episode.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Bakula was wonderful. Awesome. Awesome. Awesome dude. I can understand why people love him so much. And I think there's this saying like, you know, the ones who are great keep working because people want to work with them, you know? And I'm not saying the opposite of that because I just want to say positive stuff. So the first two or three times what they did was Diamond put an apple box right in front or to the side of the Mercedes. He throws me over the hood from one side to the other. So I take a step and leap off the apple box back to something like this. Right. And I get serious air, right? And I'm like, I'm Superman in it, right? Trying to go big. I'm a young kid trying to impress, you know, trying to show Diamond I can do this. And then, like, we did two of them. And then they were like, on this one, we don't want you to get air. We want you to slide across, right? And so I go on my stomach and I slide across. And then they use the one where I got all the air. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Do you sit at home and like with your son watch your episodes and say like there's daddy and stuff like that?
The way I do it with him, he's 4 and a half, is I say Duke, who's that on the screen? Or I'll say who does that look like? And I'm like, Duke, do you know who that is? You know, and he'll go, that's daddy.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah,
that is awesome.
So yeah,
that's awesome.
That's what we do. It's fun. I actually do that too with I love the original Mission Impossible TV series.
Mm-hmm. And that's good.
I record them all. My dad played several different characters on it.
Oh, really?
And so
you get to see your dad on it.
Yeah. So, and I love doing that. So, when he was on it, he was younger than me, which is crazy to see my dad so young, you know, like and see him running and doing all this stuff. Cause my dad, you know, my dad's 81 now. And so I'll pause it and I'll go, hey, Duke, who's that on the screen? Who's that? And he'll try and figure it out. But it's like he's looking at my dad from 1967 or 69. You know, it's like there's a guy up there. Mm-hmm. He's like younger than I am. But I think that's it's really cool because I'll do that with him, too. So,
yeah, that's awesome. It's grandpa.
Yeah.
Wow. That's cool.
Yeah.
Would you let him be a stuntman one day or would you do the same thing your father did and try to discourage him?
I would not discourage him. I love this job.
Okay.
The hardest part of this job is in between jobs.
Mm.
Yeah. You never know when you're going to work again. It's very much a who you know business or who knows you. And you really have to put a lot of time into making really quality relationships with people. And, I mean, the relationships I've built with the people that I work with, I cherish those relationships. I love those people, but it's a business. It's that kind of a business where then you can get opportunities when people get to know who you are. You know, it's rare that someone will just call somebody completely random without knowing them and say, you know, come to work, unless there's a very specific need. And even then they're usually vetted and people check with other people they do know. So, I love doing stunts. I love storytelling. I love movie magic. And I'm just very, very grateful to be a part of this small part of the fabric. But I'm happy,
an important part,
happy to be in the fabric. Let's just put it that way. Yeah.
Yeah. Is there any stunts that you wanted to do that you haven't done yet? I know there's an episode of Quantum Leap about stuntmen. I don't know if you got a chance to watch that. It's in the first season, but it's pretty good. But I think that one focused on the one younger stuntman, and it wanted to do like a fire gag. Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Where you light
yeah.
yourself on fire and yeah. stuff like that. Have you done that kind of stuff? Or what is the like craziest thing you've done and been in that situation of like, am I really doing this?
I've been blown away by a couple of bombs. So,
oh wow,
yeah,
and live to tell about it,
thankfully. So, yeah.
yeah,
You know, to me, it's not about crazy, it's not about adrenaline junkie, it's about doing quality work and being able to go back to work the next day and do it again. So, when I first got in, that I wanted to do everything I could. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'm doing that. Now I just want work. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
That's cool. Do you have, you mentioned you did, you've been working and you got some things coming up. Is there anything we should be on the lookout for?
Oh, let's see. I mean,
you can talk about, I know there's a lot of things you can't really talk about.
You won't see my face in any of them.
Right. Just, but your elbows and stuff.
my elbows. Yeah. I think to be honest, it's in this era that we're in, it's best not to talk about stuff until after
okay.
it airs. However,
okay.
however, mm-hmm. if you want to look at my IMDb page,
aha,
I update, I make sure that that's updated constantly with the stuff that I'm working on currently okay. or, you know, just done, so long as the titles are up and available. So you can
okay.
see like what's coming. But I'd rather not okay. say.
I understand. But we can follow you there if we do our research.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. Very good.
Yeah.
Very good. And we'll check out your YouTube channel on with your Camaro. That's pretty cool. You got your other classic cars on there or just the Camaro?
Well, what I was doing was I was getting together with other people who own muscle cars. And I was racing them. And we were putting these classic pieces of machinery side by side, racing them and then telling stories or making, there was a story out of the day or the event. It was always an adventure in some way. So yeah, in fact, there's one where I didn't have another muscle car, but my dad came and visited me. He's like, Steve, I want to drag race you. And I'm like, what? So he just hopped in my daily driver and we made a video on the fly. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Did you ever meet Kit as a kid with your dad working on that show?
No. I was born, I should say when I was born. I was born after Knight Rider ended.
Okay.
Wow. I was, yeah. So it ended in 84. Is that right? Did you know?
I want to say around that time. I know, I don't know. It went on a while. It was early 80s, maybe 86.
That wasn't 86. It was before then.
It was 86?
It was before then.
I know my Knight Rider shirt says 83 on it, but I don't know what that means.
Okay. I'll just put it this way. I was born shortly after it ended.
Okay.
And then, you know, I wasn't really old enough to go to any sets until at least the 90s.
Yeah. So it would have to be Knight Rider 2000 or something.
I don't think Dad was a part of Knight Rider 2000, but I did get to, now there's like a handful of people who have replica kit cars that get mm-hmm. used mm-hmm. specifically for TV shows and movies. Mm-hmm. There's like two that I know of that do a lot of them. And, they had Hasselhoff playing himself in Ted 2 and Kit was there.
Yeah.
And yeah. it got cut out of the movie, but I'm pretty sure it did when I saw it, but they had a whole bit with Hasselhoff and Kit. And I was doing stunts that day, getting out of the way of Kit. So that's the closest I can say.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. But one of the Kit license plates, the original ones, is at my dad's house. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. Okay. Wow. So much film history. That's amazing.
I love history. I'm thankful to be so close to it. And, a lot of amazing people who worked in this business. And I just, I do look up to them.
What's your overall feeling, having worked on two episodes of Quantum Leap? What's your overall feeling of like the set, the people that work on there, the feeling?
Okay, well, that's a good question. The two leads, Raymond and Caitlin, super sweet, wonderful people. They're fantastic. They're the type of people that, like, when you meet them, they want to know more about you than, you know, than you're like, what? So they're top notch. They let's just say they deserve to be where they are, and I'm happy for them.
That's awesome.
But first and foremost, I want to thank Jeff Barnett, because he's the reason I've gotten to work on the show. He's a great friend. He's a fantastic stunt coordinator. And, I wouldn't be able to have had that, dream job of jumping off of a roof, jumping through a breakaway table, sliding cars, around, doing near misses in cars, working on the back lot. It's all because of him. So
hopefully we'll get a chance to talk to him, at some point. So that'll be great.
Yeah, cool.
But I wanted to talk to you because, you're jumping off buildings for Quantum Leap and for all us fans. And it's amazing to get to talk to the guy that's doing that.
So thank you.
I'm
as excited as you are. Let's put it that way. So
it's an exciting time. Yeah. I mean, Quantum Leap's back, and there's fans from the original and then brand new fans that get to see this. So, it's good stuff. And I really appreciate you talking to me today. And, I appreciate you being on, and, we appreciate what you do. So thank you.
That's super sweet. That's super nice. I'm just a fall guy, you know? So you don't need to, I mean, it's cool that you say that you appreciate what I do, and I thank you for that, but, I'm just lucky to be there. So.
Mm-hmm. Every time I watch that episode with my daughter, I'll be like, you see that guy? I talk to that guy.
Cool.
So I appreciate it.
Right on.
All right. Thanks.
Hey, Steve. It was my pleasure.
Ernie, welcome to the Quantum Leap podcast.
Well, thank you. It's great to be with you guys. I'm very excited to be with you guys.
We're really excited to have you. I mean, you have a career that speaks for itself. I think that Matt and I could honestly just sit here for the rest of the day and ask you about Ghostbusters, but, you know, we'll keep it to Quantum Leap.
Well, I'm always happy to talk about it, so it's all good.
Well, we were thrilled when we heard that you had been cast as Magic. Can you tell us a little bit how you came to Quantum Leap?
Yeah, you know, I years ago when the original show, I can't say I watched every episode, but my sons, I was a single dad, my two older boys, especially, I have four sons. We would watch the show, and I found it a great show to be able to sort of have a discussion about things and, you know, the past or whatever. And so we always enjoyed it. They're fans, big fans of the show. They were really excited when they found out that I was going to be a part of it. But I work on another show called The Family Business that I executive produce and star in. So I was pretty busy. But when they approached me with the idea of Quantum Leap, which is exciting in and of itself, what was really exciting for me and is always exciting for me is they said they liked my work and they would like me to be a part of it. That's a huge thing for me because I don't audition. I hate begging for a job. So the fact that they liked me, you know, when I was a kid and, you want to get the girl to like you. So the fact that they liked me, meant a lot. And, I was very, appreciative of how they, brought the show to me and, just very, yeah, very excited to be a part of it. So that's how I first heard. My agent said, yeah, they, you know, they love you. I had a discussion with the producers and it was on.
That's really great. So, you said that you were a fan of the original series. You watched it with your sons. Do you have any specific memories of the original that came back once you heard that you were going to be on the new show? Any favorite episodes or?
Well, I think the biggest thing that, that I sort of came away from the show with, I was a fan of Scott Bakula, a fan in the sense that I loved his charisma. The two guys, there was a charm that Scott brought to the show. That was a huge part of it. And so when I think on the show, up until now, I sort of, that was all part of it. Thinking back on the show, oddly enough, the episode that my character, now that I guess we can talk about it, was a part of, that kind of, you know, the idea of leaping into someone of a different, but not only background, but a different race, a different, that was fascinating. But so I can't say any real specific, the relationship that Al had with his wife, that was sort of interesting, just in terms of relationships and what do you take to hold on to when he's stuck in another country, another part of the world, and yet she's not sure. So all those kind of themes, those life themes, were fat, and they come back to mind. But so I'm not sure if I if I give you specific answers, but it's sort of a general feel of, like so many shows I watch, I've always had a warm feeling about the show and what it was attempting and what it did, especially during that time. And, you know, it's 30 years later and we're at a bit of a different time, but all those big overall ideas are still important and still at play.
I'm interested. You mentioned about the fact that, of course, you're playing what we think of as a legacy character. Magic was in an episode of the original series. But, of course, we never actually saw Magic as a character. We saw Sam Beckett pretending to be Magic. And we saw, effectively, what we understand of Magic is from how the other characters around him, how the other Navy SEALs. I'm just wondering, how did that feed into your preparation for the role? Because unlike the other characters around you, or the other actors around you, you weren't being given a blank slate with a script. You were being given a legacy character, but not quite.
But not quite. I mean, first of all, I love the idea that it's a continuation and this guy is still around and still, but I've always been fascinated. And I don't think I ever got a chance to see in the original show what happens when this experience, I mean, the idea of being, of leaping is one thing. The idea of being leapt into, that's a whole other thing. How does your life, obviously there's a huge change in the lives of the people that he's leaping into, but what does that leave you with? I mean, how do you make sense out of it? And so once I signed up to be a part of this, my question is, well, what's happened to him since then? Obviously, he's a career person, but that had to be traumatizing in so many ways. I mean, just the idea of my own life disappearing for a couple of days and not knowing what that was about, and yet knowing something happened. So that to me is, and that impact, does that, you know, how do you deal with that? Do you, because it can't be totally positive. I mean, obviously he has issues that came from that. And so how do I make this a person who had that experience and yet continued with his career, but was so impacted that he worked extremely hard to get this project up and running again, and finding out about it and understanding what happened, not only what happened, but who it was that it happened with. So all those things were, and there are no real definite answers. Some I can fill in the spaces, but that's sort of being revealed to me as we sort of go along with the show. Hopefully we'll be around long enough to kind of uncover some of that. But I would think that Magic went through some changes, and I think that has to reflect in the person that he is. But I also think that, which is one of the things that was really important to me, it creates a certain empathy in terms of other people, in terms of his view on life. So the first approach was, okay, he's a military man, and so he's a tough guy, he's hard. And I go, yeah, but just even based on that experience, there has to be another level that I'm still trying to figure out where that extra gear is. But how did that impact everything moving forward? His relationships, obviously he's has had issues with his family. He, you know, so yeah, how do you make him a human being and not go, oh, his guy and I get programmed. And so he's really a solid, you know, happy guy, and life sort of unfolded perfectly. I don't think life did for a while. And I think he still struggles with some of the after effect.
Well, as we found out in episode 4, in the original history, magic died. So that has to also affect how he approaches things and his lease on life.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the choices we make and the leaps seem to happen at a real crucial time in people's lives. And it alters everything and everyone that moves forward. We assume they don't know that. They just know that life just carries on. But magic is one of the rare people who knows what would have happened otherwise. And that's pretty heavy to think that my life would have ended and yet I got this second chance. And yet here's a person responsible for that, or here's a project that's responsible for that. And I don't have access to it. I mean, I'd love to find this person and not only say thanks, but try to even now, I don't totally understand. But in putting things together to try to assemble the best minds possible, because it's so important that this work in a way that could be beneficial to the world, certainly has been beneficial to me. If I know nothing other than I would have died, that's pretty powerful.
Yeah. Well, I mean, keeping on that track, I mean, magic being the reason the new project exists, we learned in this episode. Now that we're all familiar with the characters and the show's dynamic, do you think that we're going to get to see any of that backstory of how magic brought the project to life, how he brought the team together?
Yeah.
Or,
well, yeah. I mean, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I think that's really important to me. And yes, why I wanted to do the show. I'm assuming that will be a large part of it. I mean, I don't certainly not looking for a character that I can sort of sit in an office and bark a few orders and disappear. so I want to know more. I want to, you know, this is his world, his life. You know, we do shows where we focus on certain people, but as far as my character is concerned, it's his life, and it's important that we sort of get to know him and see where he is in the middle of all of this. And I think those are things that will unfold, not just with me, but I think all the characters, you know, they're all interesting, but who are they? And I'm curious. And that's one of the fascinating aspects of this show, is we get to see the leaps and we get to see a look at a nostalgic look at history and what was happening at the time and what happens to these people. But also we get to see right now, current time, what is happening. Who are these people who are sacrificing or doing everything they can to make it happen? So that is, to me, just as important as everything else is happening in the show.
I'm going to just switch tracks a little bit here, because there's starting to be quite a clear picture coming together in the series that magic is sort of the level-headed character that brings everyone down to earth when the rest of the team are maybe going off at a tangent. I'm interested in, does that reflect at all in the way the cast are interacting? What's the relationship like behind the scenes?
Well, I met these guys, and I didn't know, to be honest, I didn't know any of them. I might have seen Raymond in something, but nothing that I could put my finger on and say, you know. And so once I was invited to join the team, the first question I had, and who am I on the team with? But I got to say, when we had a little time in Vancouver where we shot the pilot, to sort of hang out and get to know each other. I love these guys. They're really one of the most, fun casts, certainly most talented, or as talented as anybody I've ever worked with. But, and there's a charm, like I had mentioned earlier, one of my loves for the original show was Scott Bakula and his just natural sort of ease. But Raymond Lee, When I met him and got to know him, I knew that the show is going to be fine because there is an accessibility. There's he's not like, we're not trying to do Sam Beckett and the original Quantum Leap again, but he has his own. And I knew that we're going to be fine. He's the center of it, the center of the leaps. Caitlin Bassett, all the guys are just, and I think there's a bond. They were all, Ghostbuster fans and Crow fans. And so it took a minute to kind of go, you know, I'm just Ernie. I'm not Winston Zeddemore or whatever. But so I think it put me in a position of being, the sort of senior guy who's trying to do everything you can to get the show running, which is, I guess, is what we're doing on the show. I think the relationship, a parental relationship, it's sort of there naturally. And when we're not working, we're all talking and spending time together. It's a great relationship. And I think that carries through in the show. Magic's as hard as he wants to be, he still really loves these people. I feel that same way about the cast. I mean, I want to see them succeed as much as myself. I mean, I'm so excited for all of them and what will come out of this. But they're really I think there's a bond, there's a love that we had time to spend together, to build. And I love that. And I'm so appreciative of sometimes I'd like to think that, you know, I'm just like all the other guys, like all the kids. Hey, guys. And then I realized, no, I'm a little bit older, you know. Yeah, we're just kind of starting out. No, I've done a couple of things in a few years. And I don't want to be anybody's dad, but I really care about you. And, you know, maybe you shouldn't do that. Maybe now. So I get into that kind of dad role, maybe even grandpa role. I don't know. But it's a great relationship, and hopefully that will continue. They're all really wanting to be there and bringing their best. I've worked a lot. And that's not always the case. And so I find myself in the position of trying to get people just to show up on time. And this is not this situation. Everyone's really excited about it.
Did they actually explain Real Housewives to you?
No, not really. I think it was some attempt to, there's some things I go, I'm not going to get it. There's certain things just not going to happen. It was a period where a couple of people bought cars. I had bought a car recently and they were trying to explain to me my car. And I'm like, you know what? I will never, I love the car, but I don't know how to do anything. So it's not going to happen. You can spend all day explaining it, but if I can just do the cruise control and the seat adjustment, I'm fine. So in some of the shows, we'll talk about some of it, I go, you know, I'm not going to be watching it. That's in life. My son was really excited about a show he called me about last night, and I watched an hour of it, and I looked at my wife and I said, are you getting this? Cause it's not making sense. We don't have to go through the rest. We've suffered enough. But the important part of being older is knowing what you like and what you don't like and being okay with that, you know.
I think it's nice that the chemistry that you guys share behind behind the scenes really comes out in the show, and it's coming out more and more as we settle into the characters and who they are. And as you said, it's not just where you're sitting up as Magic barking orders, because one of my favorite scenes is when you said, "I'm sorry you feel that way, but I'm not asking." That was one of your lines. And I thought Magic was going to be more of a hard ass, but then we go one episode later and they're more working in lockstep. And he's like, "Okay, I have to lie to the Pentagon, but what kind of lie do I need to tell?" So you can tell that everybody's sort of, you know, on each other's side now. And it's nice to see that dynamic build on screen, as I guess, as well as it's been building off screen.
Yeah. And I think that's because I think in the beginning we weren't, and I don't think the producers, we weren't quite sure. But what I knew is I don't want him to lose his humanity. I mean, he's there for a reason and it's not just a job. So I think that has to come through. But on the other hand, he also has to be able to, like, you know, if we're going to take the parent role or whatever, he has to be able to say, no, this has to be done. But knowing when to do that, when to be hard. And that's, to me, that's really, really important, because he's trying to figure it out too. And as much as you want to go, you know, Magic's not in a situation where he can go, "I know everything and you do your job," and you, because they're having to explain exactly what are we doing here now, because, you know, I can keep up, I understand certain things, but I really need you because there are places I can't go. So it's a little hard to be really, you know, just, it's not just a job. It's, you have to care about these people and you have to show them that I need you here. You know, I can't just bring anybody in here to do what you do. But you got to realize that this is important. And I think if we take the show, you know, really realistic and look at it, this possibility of leaping of everything that's going on, I think you have to, we're stepping into people's lives. So this is, it's not just fun. Even though I will say one of the things that's important for me is that Magic does have a sense of humor. So as we move along, I'd like to see that from time to time, you know. I don't want to be cracking jokes every episode, but from time to time, I think a little humor would be nice.
One of the things about that I think is kind of cool, you joining the new show, is that you got to reunite with Deborah Pratt.
Yeah,
because you did a movie with her back in the day.
I did. In fact, one of the first shows I did when I came out to L.A., breaking into the industry, Don Belisario, and I think it might have been Don's first, I don't want to say for sure, but I think it might have been one of the first shows that he directed. It was Black Sheep Squadron with Robert Conrad. Mm-hmm. And he cast me as a Pacific Island native guy with a grass skirt. And Peter Frampton was on the show. Who played an officer, and I was one of the local natives who was helping him to defeat the whatever. Anyway, that was kind of the storyline. Shirley Ralph, who I think just won an Emmy, she played my daughter. And so that's when I first met Don, just before I worked with Deborah. But on that episode, I had worked on a TV movie and I broke my leg, which was the strangest thing. I was working on a movie with Robert Conrad, with Larry Hagman and Robert Culp. And on that Last of the Good Guys, I think. Anyway, I can't remember. Anyway, so I broke my leg and I was in the cast, and I had just taken the cast off when Don cast me in this thing. So my leg was half the size of the other leg. And I had to carry Shirley Ralph, who's an adult, down this mountain to get away from the enemies coming. And but anyway, that's why I met Don Belisario. And then before he and Deborah actually married, but we did
Space Hunter.
Space Hunter. You know, Space people Hunter. Say, "Oh, you look so young." I go, "Yeah, but my mind is." So we did Space Hunter and got to work and became friends with Deborah. And I just love her. So it's great to be able to come. We haven't worked together since, but I think she's really creative and just a really, really wonderful person. And so, yeah, I'm really excited that she's very much involved in this this show. I know she was very much so in the original. So she and Don. And so that's also very one of the nice things for me to be a part and to be able to come together with them again after all these years.
We really got sort of a bombshell in this episode because if we can go back to Magic's revelation to Ian in that scene, it's the first time as fans we've ever seen on screen a Leapy discuss his Leap experience.
Yeah.
And the way you guys played it is that Magic just basically blacked out for a couple of days.
Right.
But you're saying that there are other aspects of the character, like other parts of his life, maybe it didn't go so well after the Leap, and he kind of remembered Sam. But are we going to get to see or hear any more specifics about that experience as the show goes forward that you know of?
Well, I think I look at it this way. I hope so. And a lot of it, of course, is, you know, I'm not in the writing room. Even though I should be, but I'm not. I'm not in the writing room. But I think everything that happens with Magic from this scene, and he talked a little bit about it. It was, I think, in that, if I remember, it was like a door, someone nudging against the door, and I opened the door. So there's an awareness of something, and it's really kind of, you know, it's traumatic in a very, very strange way. The relationship, I think he struggles with the relationship. He's not married anymore. I know he's a bit estranged from his daughter. He talks about his daughter. That is not, it's wonderful to feel like a father figure to these people I'm working with. He understands work, but relationships, and I think a lot of that goes back to trying to make sense out of this moment, this life-altering moment. I think he might have had some issues maybe with drinking or whatever, and I don't want to say what that will be. I don't know that for sure. Like I said, that'll be a discussion with the writers and hopefully with me and the writers. But definitely it is not something that he's just made peace with and he's resolved with. I think getting this program up is a way for him to get some answers about his own life. And he was named Magic before that Leap happened. So he's an intuitive guy. You know, I think he's very spiritual in his own way. He believes in other possibilities. So I think that's still there, but it makes it even more. He's not just a practical guy. This happened and I can forget about that. This is, where does that go? How does that tie me into? How's my life? If my life continues, where am I at in the universe? How do I, all those things? And certainly relationships, because no matter what happened to you, it didn't happen to the person you're married to, and they may not understand or be willing to know why you're taking all of our resources to get some program up and running. So I know that his relationships have been strained. Yeah, and so he's still making sense out of it, and I hope that we get a chance to see that as the show go along. I think even an explanation in episode 4, you know, it was like, yeah, this happened, and he seems like he's okay with it, but I think there are other things that he can't explain that still is impacting his life.
Yeah, it's just so much good stuff to mine there, especially as longtime fans. It's an aspect of the show that we never really got to see.
Yeah.
And I appreciate the fact that when you discuss it, you realize sort of like the moment that we're at, sort of the depth that involves, because it really is a big deal for us as fans.
Yeah, and certainly it is for him. I think one of the things, there are a lot of, I guess they call them Easter eggs, whatever, but there are a lot of things, connections to the original series. Al's wife and his daughter being involved, and my relationship with her, I felt a connection with her. And obviously, you know, I've got to know the family in a very personal. So all those things and the earlier episodes. So for the original fans who knew the episodes, because it's, you know, it's kind of hard for me to be specific, but there are people who are, and to be able to see some of those connections, hopefully with some other people who were, you know, part of the Leap experience. That is something that hopefully we'll see unfold as we move forward.
Yeah, we're looking forward to seeing that. I also hope that they can explore a little bit more about how Magic actually went out and found Beth and Al.
Because
it's not necessarily a relationship that was pre-existing.
Exactly.
He had to go find them.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And I think in search for those answers, I think Beth in the second episode, first episode, I'm not quite sure, but saying, you know, I know how difficult it is to have to go through this without having anyone. So, you know, he, this is really, really important to him. Taking the paternal role with the workers is helpful for him because it gives him meaning and purpose. But in his personal life, in his real life, I think that's an area of difficulty for him. But I think as we, when we begin to see the connection to other episodes and other, you know, from the original pop up, possibly that would be, I'd be very interested in see how those things unfold.
We're all really interested in that. I'm sorry. I said I was going to be a little bit of a fan geek here today. So bear with me. Yeah. Well, we know that your time is limited. You've been very generous. Are there any aspects of the character Magic that we haven't touched upon that you'd like to discuss or elements in the show in general?
I'm just very excited about how it's unfolding. You know, that artificial intelligence, we haven't really got to experience Ziggy. We've experienced it, but we haven't got to explain clearly sort of what that is. And so how does, as I begin to get clear on it, and obviously, hopefully, as I do, the fans, because I'm not privy to a lot of, you know, what they're thinking. We've had discussions, but every script is a new experience for me, too. So I'm really excited about the possibilities and how it all fits into, I every night I say a prayer for Raymond Lee. Because he's carrying the heavy load, but and he's working really hard. But it's just very exciting. And but I know that there's a lot of respect and commitment to get it right, to not leave the other series behind, but a continuation of. And to be respectful to the fans who've been so loyal over so many years. That means a lot to me.
Well, it means a lot to us. And on behalf of all of those fans, we'd like to thank you. And thank you for joining us here on the Quantum Leap podcast.
Wait, no Ghostbuster questions? No, I'm kidding.
Well, now that you have 2 hours.
So, oh my God.
Is there something that especially makes you feel good?
I don't know. It's Chris. Something strange. Maybe, I don't know. Anyway, it's I just love and appreciate you guys for the fact that you love the show. It means so much to me. And I just want to honor that and show up and bring my best. And just thank you for being who you are.